What's up, everybody? Nick Sarnicoli here, Forged by Fire, episode 18, coming to you from Hollywood, West Hollywood, with Delvet Quinn. So we're going to get to that in just a second. For those of you guys that are brand new, quick backstory. From Michigan, never understood the principles of, you know, entrepreneurship, success, etc. I come from a very middle-class family. I worked at factories. I thought my outlet was going to be baseball. Played college baseball, got introduced to entrepreneurship when I was 18 through the direct sales networking industry, fell in love with it. Made my first million at 25, bought the assets of that company when we went out of business. We built a company that did a couple billion in sales. And in that, saw every success and every failure, every peak and valley that you can imagine on about a 15-year journey of a company. And if you think about, you know, we filled up arenas, we lost leaders, we opened up countries that were successful, we did product launches that absolutely tanked. Every lawsuit, every victory, like everything you could possibly imagine had happened in that journey. And I wanted to be able to take all of those failures and all the successes, bottle them up, and share with them to you with guests that we bring on. And Forged by Fire is a little bit unique of a podcast because it's not about the tips of how we made it. It's not about just the success stories. It's actually talking about what didn't work. It's talking about, you know, kind of the failures and the pain or the fire and how we become forged coming out of that. So I've got my brother for, God, we've known each other since 2007.
Yeah.
2008, yeah. 15 yeah. years now. Yeah. We met in Atlanta, and you made your way to LA. So tell us your quick story, and then we're going to dive into the story. So where you're from, what's your upbringing? Tell us the goods.
First of all, thanks for having me. I appreciate this moment and opportunity. It's so good to see you. It's been a while since we were face to face. We talk all the time on the phone.
You're handsome as ever.
Thank you for that. I was born in Stamford, Connecticut. My folks moved to Bridgeport. I never really met my father. My mother was very young when she had my brother, myself, my sister, and my younger brother. And unfortunately, she was so young, she really didn't have what it took to take care of four kids on our own. We were adopted by an amazing couple from Jamaica. So I speak the language very clearly and I cook the food. I grew up in that culture.
Oh, curry goat.
Curry goat.
You don't know
day.
I love curry
know about
goat,
curry
did
chicken
you?
And curry goat. And all right, all right, all right.
Everything
so, I said everything I heard. So I grew up in a home that had its difficulties, meaning that we were finally reunited as a family. But again, I'm in a home where we were taught not to really love ourselves, you know, to more hate ourselves. It was us against them. So that created some challenges in terms of self-love. I had
they,
to really
they
teach
adopted
myself.
All four of you.
They adopted and kept all four of us.
Wow.
What an amazing story if it started and stopped there. You know, so the blessing was that you guys grew up together, but you grow up in a home that has a lot of challenges and a lot of scary moments that say your value is decreased instead of increased.
Okay.
And that is an example, I guess, of being forged by fire in that
sure.
regard. That's the beginning
early.
Of it, early on. But you fast forward to a little kid who got the balls to challenge his fears. Like, I'm deathly afraid of this person who's saying I can't do anything because I was programmed that I wasn't good enough or I wasn't this. But I remember approaching my father and asking permission to do something that he said I could never do. And he said yes. I remember hugging him. I remember diffusing that bomb. I remember feeling powerful in that moment. So that was my first lesson at a very young age of what success would look like if I faced my demons.
Yeah.
I fast forward into that and I took that principle and policy into my life, getting involved in health and wellness and fitness and seeing what that did for people and empowering them empowered me. It sort of vibrated in the same sense of, oh, I'm getting that same emotion back now by helping other people. It's also helping me at the same time with that validity, with that feeling and emotion. I started creating a business. I created a business by opening up a private personal training studio.
How young were you?
I was in my 20s.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I'm 23. I'm a puppy at this point, you know what I mean? I didn't finish college because my father had prostate cancer. I ended up going back home and taking care of him and working and paying for hospital bills and things of this nature. But, you know, workaholic. Doing the things that I thought was the right things to do instead of growing a student of learning and wanting to know business and becoming an entrepreneur was very easy for me. But for me, it was an emotional entrepreneur, right? Meaning that solopreneurs, I think is what you'd call it, is that I remember being an amazing artist and having a t-shirt, and I'm in school. I'm probably in eighth grade or ninth grade or something. And I remember drawing on it at night with pastel colors.
I didn't know this about you.
Yeah, so amazing artist. And I literally went to school with it on, and the kids freaked out. Who did that? Where'd you get that? Oh my God, I was like, I made that. No, you didn't. I made that. Can you make me one? Yeah, it's gonna cost you $50, you know, in Testament. And I took in 60 orders that day at $50 a pop. I never felt more powerful in that moment. It said to me that I could actually create a product. I could sell a product. I could create value. And that was my first introduction into what it's like to be an entrepreneur, what it's like to be validated, what it's like to have value. So all of that led me to the personal training world. All of that led me to owning my private studios. All that led me to my career here in California. Haven't had left Florida, hadn't had left Atlanta, and now I'm here in California because I worked really, really hard and believed in a brand that I was building so much that it became visible. This is pre-Instagram.
Yeah.
This is this is pre-social media. This is like creating the perfect business card to be remembered.
MySpace.
This is back then.
I met you in MySpace.
Exactly. Back then. So it was for me finding ways of building a brand outside of the assistance of a camera, right?
How did you know that you wanted to build a business out of fitness, right? So it's one thing to be great at fitness. It's one thing to be a great athlete. How did you know that, like, that's my lane for business?
I think, again, it was about how I felt. It made me feel validated when I could help another person. So I said, wait a second, this is so much more than one push-up, two. It was so much more than just counting. It was, for me, I need to recreate this emotion over and over again. And also, my ego didn't say, I'm the only one who could do it. My ego said, spread everything that you know so you don't have to be the only one doing it.
Which is the difference between a solopreneur and an entrepreneur.
1,000%. So
you were leading other trainers.
I was leading other trainers. I was giving away my IP, so to speak.
Yep.
I was saying, hey, you know, I have 70 clients. I'm willing to give them to you if you let me teach you everything I know and you use my brand that I built.
Yeah.
Sure. Yep. I only have one client. Come on board.
Roll them up.
Roll them. And then two trainers working under me became seven. Seven became 14. 14 became 30. And it became this. And then they in turn had, you know, people. So I created this business within a business that was, let me not only train you how to market yourself and market business, but if you're great enough, I want you to come work for me. You can relate to that somehow. I got a feeling you can.
Leadership.
1,000%.
Leadership. So you're able to create a great company, get recognized for that, and specifically in the fitness world, because we're going to dive to that in just a second. And you know, over the course of time, you become a celebrity trainer, you become a master authority in fitness, you become a brand in itself, you become a speaker, you become an author, an endorser of products, you know, a lifestyle coach. Like, you know, it doesn't stop there on that next 20-year journey.
Is that not at all?
Is that all encompassing? I know I've left other things out. Like, you started the business.
It's all encompassing, you know, and when you say it, it's a bit like, wow, that's a lot.
You've done some shit.
I've done some shit, right? Like, they're like, someone hearing you say
that. Got some fashion sense.
All of that. And there's a story and a reason behind all of this. You know, the fashion sense comes from, I wanted to impress women. I wanted to be a black James Bond, right? For me, it's like, that guy's so cool. I want to be able to look at a woman and size her up and say, okay, you're a 6, you're an 8, you're a 10. Like, and know that I got you some stuff. You know, there was a big thing for me at a very young age. I wanted to be that guy. It's shaking that stir. I wanted to cook for her, right? Yeah. I wanted to drive the right car. I wanted to add value to something, right? And that meant the people, places, and things in my life. You know, the Renaissance man isn't dead. You know, I'm that.
I mean, I've always admired you and that aspect of you, and just the pure swag, you know, just the pure swag. Outside of like what you've done in business and what you've done in your lane, being one of the best in the world, and just the pure swag.
I appreciate that.
We're gonna get off the James Bond here for a second. So there comes an opportunity that lasts at least 8 years, we'll call it.
Okay.
You tell me, you'll correct me.
8 years.
8 years of the journey that you've had over the last two decades, and it becomes a critically important part of the development of your path.
Yep.
Tell us what happens. Tell us about the call, or does it go down in an interview, a call? I'm letting you.
I met my gym, the one in Buckhead, and we are rocking. I mean, Janet Jackson's on the treadmill. You know, I can go on a name, you know, Boris Kojo's on the elliptical. You know, I can go names and names, and I could just, and the energy in there and the people and the trainers, I'm in a great rhythm. Like, I handpicked all the design in my place. I remember driving somewhere and getting the brick because I wanted fresh brick on the walls as we were building this stuff up, right? I hired a specific carpenter and I had a dream about what I wanted the front desk to look like.
Nice.
Right? So I pretty much made it look like a New York City loft, and I had that vision. So we were rocking and rolling. The phone ringing. The phone's not just ringing because NBC calls. The phone's ringing because Janet Jackson's trainer, who is my friend, who I helped, you know, him do some stuff with her and train with her and stuff like that at my place, calls me and says, Janet is with Tyler Perry right now. And there's a part that he just wrote for on his show, House of Pain. They're looking for a guy who can act good looking and play a trainer. She said, what about your friend whose gym we're using, Tyron? And he called me and said, I'm like, stop playing around, bro. Like, Tyler Perry and Janet Jackson aren't talking about me right now. And he said, yeah, they are. They're going to call you. And sure enough, they called me.
Wow.
I auditioned.
Didn't know this part of the story.
I auditioned. I got the part. And I played a character, his name was Francois, on House of Pain.
That's such
and I did about three or four episodes on that show.
Okay.
That was the beginning of,
you
I did
in front
a couple
of the
commercials. I did a couple commercials prior to that, but that was the beginning of me doing sitcom television, major network, you know, all those other things. And so this began the trickle effect.
Okay, I got you. You know, by the way, I will be calling you Francois from this point.
That's hilarious. Francois was supposed to be French, right? Here's the backstory to that. He's supposed to be a French guy, but I couldn't do a French accent that well, but I could do a Jamaican one.
Oui, oui.
You know, yeah, I couldn't. So I auditioned, but I used a Jamaican accent. Yeah. Because I flipped it, they freaking loved
Which
it.
Which is, you know, near Haiti.
Near-ish. It's like over here, but close, right? I got the part. It really just opened up my eyes because I remember doing plays growing up in school and things of that nature. So it wasn't so far-fetched from something that
I loved. So you had a flair for drama, theater.
You know, I took a lot of classes and you know, already. So I was already in that mindset. The phone rings one day. Hey, NBC is calling. They want you to come to Hollywood and they want you to come to LA and audition for some show, Biggest Loser. I'm like, no ways. So I go there thinking like, you know, I'm a big guy. You know, obviously they must have heard about my whole Tyler Perry story. They want me. I go to the Sheraton Hotel right up here, not too far from here. And I walk in the hotel and there's about 25 other trainers, male trainers, and then some female trainers in the lobby. And I'm like, wait a second, these guys kind of look like me.
Yeah.
I go and I audition in a small little room and they loved me. I get a call back a couple hours later, and they said, we've narrowed it down to three guys. You're one of the three. Jillian Michaels vouched for one of the three guys.
Okay.
And she said, oh, I remember seeing him in New York. He'd be great, da 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 da. And they just went on her word and they chose him. I went back to Atlanta. Hey guys, I didn't get it. Back to business. Let's keep rocking and rolling.
Took an L.
I took an L. I was
Rejection.
Like, you know what? Boom, done.
It's over. Pack it up. Failure.
Failure. What do I do, though? I get a phone call a month later. Scooter Braun calls me and says, hey, we need a trainer to get on tour with us with Justin Bieber.
I was going to say, well, I don't know that
interested?
Name. Got you, Justin Bieber. Yeah.
Would you be interested in doing it? Matter of fact, can you give us one of your trainers? Because you're going to be too expensive. I'm like, shut up. I was actually, I just auditioned for
this.
Biggest
must have been the early
DC.
Days of Beaver if they're worried about the expense.
1,000%. He wasn't worried. He was being facetious. So I said, yes, I can do it because I just auditioned for Biggest Loser and I never got it. I didn't get it. So I'm already prepped to go away. Like, okay. I prepped myself to not be in my studio for a few months as is. He said, okay, let's talk. We negotiated a price and made it make sense for me to go away from my studio because I'm the head of the operation. And sure enough, I went on tour. Best and worst thing I could ever fucking do in my life.
Oh, wait, stop right there. What was the best part? What was the worst part?
The best part is I'm on tour. I'm seeing business at a very high level.
Sure.
Right? I'm seeing it done. I'm seeing the way Justin was poised and not poised, pressure and not pressure. I'm seeing huge multi-million dollar deals done right in front of me, endorsement deals. I'm watching the way Scooter
Usher's
works.
Involved with that? So no. Scooter's the agent?
Scooter's the manager.
Okay, manager.
Facilitator, creator, da-da-da-da. But I'm watching all these big major deals happen behind the scenes, like firsthand. You know, it's not just a, Justin has his own fragrance. I'm watching it go down and it happens, right? And so I'm learning a lot. Being on tour, sleeping on the buses, going from one city to the next, waking up the next morning, come up with plans and, you know. But the worst part was that no one took what I did serious. Yeah, I'll work out with you. Maybe I won't. You know, it was sort of this high school playing this person talking about that person. It was very wild, wild west. There wasn't any structure from a guy who needed structure and add value and purpose to the thing. So needless to say, it didn't work out.
Shit, the whole world of real fitness is structure.
1,000%.
Like accountability.
All of the
80% showing the fuck up.
and if they don't take it serious or take me serious, I don't see the interest in me even doing it.
Yeah.
Ended up coming back. And as I came back, I was probably home for a month and a half. NBC called back and said, hey, I think we made a mistake. I was like, you're fucking right, you made a fucking mistake. Right? So they said, why don't you come back out? We'd love for you to audition again. This time I came out and it was just me. It wasn't the 25 other trainers, it's me. I'm a little bit more confident. I remember some of the guy. I remember the boom mic guy. I remember the producer, Joel. Now I'm coming into it a little bit more sure of myself because I'm a little bit more comfortable. The ice has been broken, right?
Second date.
I came in there and I killed it. I killed the audition because I'd been doing that audition every single day in my studios. I was lucky enough not to just build up people that came and worked out with me. I was also lucky enough to build up trainers to make them better trainers. So I was building business, building people, building clients, building physiques, building confidence. And I poured all that into, luckily enough, the camera was watching as I did what came very natural for me because at that point I was a 10, 11 year vet in doing it. It was amazing.
And they said, you got the job.
I got the job. I did the thing. There were people on set who didn't want me there, posed me as a threat to their existence and their, you know, there's people who have been doing it for years and here I come along.
Yeah.
Who's this guy?
Who's the new guy?
Who's the new guy kind of a thing. So I had to ignore that, because, other trainers before me who had done the show got that who's the new guy or new girl and treatment. Were pushed out treatment.
So how did you personally deal with it? Did you ignore it or did you try to win them over? Like what's your kind of strategy?
I saw that I couldn't win them over.
Okay.
Because I did try to say, hey, let's be friends, but that wasn't an option. They were that protective of their brands and what they built and very childish in that regard. So I was like, okay, you're dealing with kids. Let me not make this about me. Let me make it about those five people that choose me. And it's funny because my first season on the show, for those of you who've watched it, I'm literally coming out of this huge helicopter hangar. I got my red tight fitted shirt on and I'm walking out and it was the battle of the ages. So there were three different age categories, kids in their 20s, 30s, and then 40 and above.
Okay.
Everyone needed to lose weight, but they parked a huge van in a dry desert lake a mile away from us. And their first day on set, these people who suffered with their weight had to run and then go to the trainer and land as a group to the trainer that they wanted to train with. It's myself, Anna Kournikova, and Bob Harper. So I'm saying to myself as this is going on, oh, I'm definitely gonna be the last one. There's no question I'm gonna be the last one. I'm standing next to Anna Kournikova.
That's who I would have picked.
Exactly, exactly.
And
I would have picked her too.
And I love you.
Right, exactly. I'm standing next to Bob Harper, who's done this show from the very beginning. Okay. They're not gonna pick me.
How many years in, sorry to interrupt, how many years in is the season you enter?
I enter in season 12.
Fuck, really?
I entered into season 12 and it went to season 18.
Wow, I didn't realize it was.
I was doing two seasons in the same year. So we shot back to back.
What's peak season? So I have a reference, or they have a reference.
Oh, so peak season would probably be 8, 9, 10.
Okay, so this is right as it's like at its biggest.
Bada bing, bada boom, right? And reinventing itself, new identity, you know what I mean? And so I came into it as it was here, but potentially on its way down, and it got a little bump.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So here I am in this dry desert lake, this bed, and dry desert, and the first group is coming. I'm seeing them. And sure enough, they go to Bob Harper. They're like, I've been watching this show for so long. This is the guy I'm going to trust with my weight loss. Here comes the next group. It's the younger group. And they're running along. They're trying to encourage each other. I mean, these guys are obese. They're big. And I'm watching them, and they're coming towards me. I can see them, and you can see the smoke from the sun coming off of the ground, if you will, sort of like Wild Wild West, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It's that steam like coming off the ground, right? You can see it in the distance and the sun glistening, and you see these group of five kids, and I say kids because, I mean, they're in their 20s, 21, 19, 26, no more than 26, and they're running. And I'm looking at them run, and I'm looking at Anna Kournikova, and I'm looking at them run, and I'm looking at Anna, and I'm like, okay, they're going to her, and I'm seeing. And they just turn and they come to me. How did I take myself out of it? As they were running, I said to myself, if you choose me, I choose you. I don't choose myself. I don't make this about, I'm Dalvet Quince and I'm on TV and the world's gonna love me. I'm gonna pour everything that I have in me into those five people who trusted me with shaping and sculpting their life. I'm here for a bigger purpose other than me. Overdo the work. So I tapped into things I would say to my other trainers and to myself psychologically. How do you be the best version of you? You be the best version by committing to a purpose. Separate the product from the person. The person is Dalvet. The product is how you help people once you give
the transformation.
The transformation. So I tapped into the gift, not the visual.
So you're in the game, you got your first team. Let's encapsulate, you know, a 7-year run there.
Sure.
What were the highest of the highs? What were the greatest feelings? What were the greatest moments? Like
some of the greatest moments were when I pushed people beyond what they thought they could go to, and they aligned with me and did it. When I was a firsthand witness of that click moment.
Yeah.
It's yours. It's not about just me convincing you, but I'm convincing you and you're convinced we're aligned. When I was able to see people not only transform their physiques, but transform their minds, go home and transform their families' minds and physiques, right? A lot of people think it's really about losing weight, the show. It was so much more than that. There's more weight on the brain than there is on the body.
So Say that again.
There's more weight on the brain than there is on the body. My gift was helping people take the weight off of their brain. Mm. My gift was and is what I try to tap into is showing people that if you learn to love yourself, you'll treat yourself with love. Anyone who's taken themselves to that extreme, there's a lot of self-hatred, right? There's not a lot of belief. So if I could help,
a lot of guilt,
many different reasons, a lot of variations going on there, enablers, environment, you know, genetics, whatever it might be. But if I can help you tweak your perception, correct habits, redirect, love again, like really love, then I'm doing my job.
What's crazy is because you have a lot of people that are watching this that are leading sales forces or leading teams or leading organizations. And, you know, they think what they're doing is try to provide them with a sales skill or provide them with a closing ability, you know, and that's the how to work out, let's say, the weight of the body. And it's not the weight of the body, it's the weight of the brain. Like a real leader realizes it's the mindset you're creating and the people you're leading is 80% of it. The 20% of it is the skill set.
And there's a skill set that a leader needs to have, which is how I speak to you is completely different than how I speak to him.
Right.
There's a personality difference, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There, and I, as a leader, I have to know how could I be most effective when I speak to him and get the best out of him, right? What barriers has he created for himself that I have to break down or show him how to break down to get to his ultimate truth? And the same over here. And I have to be able, in my case, in that case, TV time, do that in a short time period. I have to do that pretty fucking quickly if I don't want any of them to leave. I don't want you to be the first one gone off the ranch and going home where you're on your own figuring things out. I want you to stay because I need time. I did more work off camera than I did on. What you guys saw is what you saw, but I literally drove to where they lived and spent hours with them creating trust.
Reprogramming.
Creating trust. One of the things I knew I had to do was tell my story and not just come in as a pretty authority. I can't, hey guys, this is what we're gonna do. This is how we're gonna do it. Dude, let's do some burpees. Let's go. It was so more than that. Look.
I've been through hell.
I've been through fucking hell. Were you overweight like me? No, but I've been overweight like you. I've been heavy.
Yeah.
I've been suppressed. I've held on to a lot of calories. But I learned how to put myself on a proper diet. I learned how to manage through my misery. I've learned how to love myself despite what I was taught, despite my enablers. And all those tools that I have, I'm gonna give to you. This is my story. And I'm gonna give you my story so that you can make parts of my story your story.
Which one was your favorite story? Or who? Or
I have to go to Elisa Rambo.
Okay. And what was...
Elisa Rambo was season 12 or 13 for me. I don't remember which one. It's probably 12. Lisa saw me on the show. So she was all smiles by the time she got to the show. She was like, oh, I want Dalvet. I want to train with Dalvet. Lisa was amazing. Married three or four kids. I don't remember anymore. And Lisa was so dedicated because... anything I said her to do, she had already said yes before I asked. There was no convincing needed. Whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do it.
She was there to change her life.
She was there to change her life. She was focused and dedicated. She wanted it for herself more than I wanted it for her. And that's hard
to rare.
Do. That's rare because I know I want a lot from people I work with. I expect a lot. She expected more. The beauty in her story is she didn't make it all the way to the end. When we there was an obvious bond. Everyone saw it with me and her. I was like a pet of mine, not a, like a pet love of mine.
Yeah.
There comes a part in the season where, like episode 8, all the people you've been working, the trainer you've been working with, now gets shifted. Now you have to go work with Bob or work with Jillian or work with Anna and work with me. So you don't get to, you know, that's just part of the gameplay of the show. She ended up working with Bob. And she ended up going home. But she stayed in touch with me. Maybe it was via email or whatever. She just tapped in and she did her thing.
What was your favorite moment you spent with her? The most emotional moment?
That's a great question. I had a few of them with her. I think one of the most emotional moments was when she was about to go home. And she was crying and she said that, I might be done here, but I'm not done in my life.
Yeah.
I'm not done. So much when she went home, she helped her mom lose 60 pounds. She helped her kids lose weight. She stopped doing her job and opened up a gym in her community
Hell
and
yeah.
helped about 100 and some people transform their lives. She lost 100 plus pounds. Her husband did the same thing. So she became this transformative authority, and she applied everything that she learned and she gave it back.
Ripple effect.
Ripple effect. It wasn't, and there's been stories that the opposite happened, where everyone who did the show, or not everyone, some people did the show, they went back into the environment that led them there in the first place, and they gained all the way back or more.
So environment won.
The environment
won. They weren't able to influence the environment.
I've had more stories like that with individuals that I worked with that I've kept the weight off because I unlocked that, the weight on the brain part more so than the weight on the body. And the way that it happened for them was 100% based on the fact that they gave back what they learned, right? That's the best quality anyone can give. You want to win? Give. See how much you get back. That's how you win.
You know, all the dozens of times that we've sat and talked, this is the first time it's really dawned on me that I wonder how much we or I have overlapped with your clients through my company.
1,000%.
I mean, we had dozens of Biggest Loser contestants.
What a juggernaut.
Icons in our company. They had never thought of me like, wait a second, did Dovet train you? Like, I never thought.
Your company overlapped. There were several other companies that, for whatever reason, Biggest Loser was this. I mean, your company was a juggernaut. Don't get it twisted. Your company's massive. I remember going to the supermarket and seeing my face on celery, on carrots, like on these packages, like the Biggest Loser, you know what I mean? Kind of a thing. And I'm like, it was just one of those things where the brand and the extensions of licensing deals were phenomenal.
Well, since you went to your face on, let's go to your face on. Because I remember we had disconnected for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I remember my reconnection to you was you had posted a new profile picture. And I was like, what the fuck? Is this one of those Disneyland things where you put yourself out to a magazine? Like, no, come on.
Who is this guy?
Is this a new promo that's being ran where anybody has the opportunity to be on the cover of this? I don't want to steal the story, but this has got to be a highlight, I'm guessing, for you during this run, because this is a really big deal.
Right.
Take it away.
You must be talking about that Wheaties box.
No fucking Wheaties box! You're on a Wheaties box! You're on the cover of Wheaties box.
It was awesome, man.
Like, how old are you now?
I'll be 50 next year.
No!
Yeah.
It's the end of the road for you.
It's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. Yeah.
I mean, growing up for you and I, like, Wheaties box was the thing.
Massive.
That was the jam. Like, you're on the cover of a Wheaties box, bro.
Yeah. And then a host of other things.
It's box.
Right. No. Don't do that. No, do this.
If somebody is 40 years old or older right now watching this, Wheaties,
right.
And
it's
they
massive.
Know you're on the Wheaties box.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I had more opportunities come my way. You know, when you build your career and you build a brand, you're at a different stages as you build that brand. The idea, the formulating it, the heart of it, the ask of it, right? The idea is, yo, I got this great idea, I want to create something. Formulate it, put it all together.
Yeah.
Right? You're in the heart of it, you're in the middle of it, it's actually working, there's some traction, you got a rhythm going on. And then the ask is, hey, anybody else interested in this idea? The Wheatie Box situation, the Brookstone situation where I'm building my own product line, I'm all over all 500, and I'm on the phone with the China Corporation, and this is this massive thing. I did stuff with PetSmart and multi whatever deals.
Chunky dogs.
And I got to a point in my career where I wasn't asking anymore.
Just coming, it's flowing. You're in the flow.
It was just flow. I saw it firsthand with Justin, right? I saw how
I got you.
It was a moment where I learned, oh, this is how that works. And so my life directed me into it. This is how that works. It was almost as if I was being prepared to accept the way things work when you reach a certain awareness in your career. And my friends who are in Hollywood, my friends who are actors and entertainers and athletes, they get that. They get the perks of what visibility brings you. And it's a dope situation.
What's interesting is the full 360 of you went on a 3-month tour with Bieber and it wasn't what you expected professionally, but really why you were there was for the education.
1,000%.
And then you were able to recognize it was happening with and for you in the moments that it was happening.
Because I learned at a very young age, stay green to grow and stoop to conquer. Like, stay green to grow. I know a lot. I know, you know, one of my mentors told me that as I was going on tour. He was like, stay green to grow and stoop to conquer. I was like, what? It made no sense to me what he said. And I'm like, and I didn't get it. I didn't get it until I was not on the tour anymore. And as I was coming home, so much, I literally got the tattoo written on me, stay green to grow, stoop to conquer right here. Which means just because you know, just stay a little humble and learn.
You know it all.
Yeah. Don't be a know-it-all, even though you know. You may have all the answers, you may know exactly what to say and do, but stay green in order to grow. Stay willing to know something else, right? And then stoop to conquer. You don't have to be on top, you don't have to bogart. Just kind of, yeah, just stay in this position. And you will come out on top. And so that lesson for me in the whole Justin era was to do that. Like, stay, learn. You may not be able to apply your gift or your reasoning why you should be here, and I wasn't able to, but that's not what it was for. It was designed to educate me for my future on how to handle different things because they were on their way.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it at the time.
And it's easy to see when you hear the whole story right now. It's like, oh, geez, it's obvious.
Yeah.
What was the peak of the flow? So when you think of, like, you know, when athletes talk about, like, I was just in the zone. What was the peak of the zone for you? What year? What?
Getting the first season out the way was a feather in my hat.
Yeah.
The second season was all flow. I was starting to understand scheduling and punctuality and hard work at a very hard level. A lot of people think, oh my God, you got it so good, you're on TV. They may not realize the hard work that it takes. The sleepless nights, the first night waking up at midnight, filming till 4 or 5 a.m. just to turn around and go back to sleep to be back at work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. It's like, okay, yeah. But you have to do certain sacrifices like that. Time, schedule, smile anyway, figure things out.
Separation from family, friends.
Separation from family, friends. I had to literally let go my business, which is a whole nother story. I created this mom situation, what I call meeting of the minds, bringing in my LA now family to meet my Atlanta family, merge the two together to help me. I created my own conciliary. I created my own boardroom.
Yeah.
Right. Once I did the show. And I think that was a great moment for me when I did that. So yeah, for me, it was really about that second season. I was able to have a clear picture of what was expected of me and what I could really do. Because I've always known the fitness industry, right? I know it hand in hand. And I know it in a way from a futuristic perspective, meaning that I had ideas of Peloton before it was Peloton, right? I had ideas of Mirror before it was Mirror, and literally verbalizing those things and still other ideas that I have now that we've discussed that's gonna be, you know, change the industry, God willing, knock on something. So yeah, it's just about applying what you know, never really turning off that entrepreneurial mind, but you're in a very sweet spot of where things are coming to you and you've created being an authority in the space of something that you truly love.
So you're running, seasons are working, everything's great.
Book deals, endorsement deals.
Wheaties!
We're rocking, brother.
Wheaties!
We're rocking.
And then what happens? Meeting? Phone call? Let's head to the fire. And this is like, it's different than I would say like in business where sometimes the fire can start and then it's like a slow burn and it's like, oh, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Like in a scenario like this, like it's within a phone call.
Sure.
It's like, it goes from 0 to 100.
Sure.
Walk me through it.
My second season on the show, I got a bunch of people together. Again, I said the Atlanta people, along with the LA people, I flew my manager, my social media director, my friend and accountant, Kelly, down to meet, you know, my friends, Sarah Blakely, Jesse Itzler, Mitch Free, Justin Epstein, Justin Anthony, people that I loved in Atlanta and got them all together and said, if you were me and I were you on this huge platform in a business that's a multi-billion-dollar business, health and wellness, what would you do and why? So I took everyone out to dinner, took them all, you know, brought out a whiteboard at a brunch. And one of the things that came up was like, what's giving you the most headache? And I would say, the gyms. The fact that my private studio is, I'm on a different time zone. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was like, well, why not get rid of it? Are you crazy?
It's my baby.
It's my baby. I'm literally on a fitness show and I have, like, it makes sense. And I remember Jesse saying to me, do you want to train 400 people or 40 million? I said, 40 million. Then get rid of the headache. And the minute I did that, it offered me a clearing to focus on a bigger purpose.
Yeah.
And so now I'm rocking and rolling.
It's a great question, that contrast right there.
Right? It's like, and so I got rid of the gyms. I got rid of it, the studio. That being said, here comes the fire. Because as we're getting closer to season and we get a phone call that they're not picking up, and you can kind of feel it, like it's almost like the last second to last episodes or seasons, Jillian Michael makes her way back. Anna Kournikova's out. She probably only did one season anyway. They asked Jillian to come back and she's been in and out the whole time. She comes back that season, comes back a second season, which ended up being her final season and our final season. They said, the show's not around anymore. I turned down a deal.
A phone call or a meeting?
In a meeting. Both. It was a little bit of a phone call.
So you could feel the vibe.
You could feel the energy and you knew then that it was over.
Yeah.
I was advised to just wait. Something else was coming along or I'm sure they'll bring it back. And so there was this waiting and hold pattern and it never was brought back. Hindsight being me, I should have taken upon myself to go immediately pursue other things while visually I was hot. Meaning that people knew my name. I couldn't walk in a room and say, oh my God, it's Scott Delvin. And I allowed too much time to go by, a year, year and a half, two, you know, 6 months off camera is really dog years, right?
42 months.
1,000%. So that was 85, 90% of my income. So when that happens, I get in that fire. I'm like, now what do I do?
Take me to the meeting. I want to dive into this in more detail. You can sense it. What were some of the things that were cues to you leading up to it where you're like, uh-oh, I think we might be coming to an end here. And then
some of the stuff in the location on the ranch were being pulled out. They were downsizing some of the equipment, right? We would do integrations with various companies, Subway, Jenny O Turkey. They would pay for time on an episode, seeing people. And so they would pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to get those endorsements weren't happening that season, okay. Which is unusual.
Okay.
Like that's something we did every single season. You know, so they knew what we were learning, which is we're not getting funded for this stuff anymore. We're not, you know what I mean?
The end is near. And when you get to the meeting, do they just rip the Band-Aid off fast? Is it like an opening sentence, hey, we got bad news or like?
No, it was more of a gradual thing. I think that's what created the holding pattern. It was like, there's a good chance that, you know, but right now we're taking a pause. We'll get back to you. We're talking to lawyers. We're talking to.
So you were optimistic.
100, rightfully so. Awesome. You know, it wasn't like, hey, we're done.
Right.
See you later. It was more, you know, let's see what happens. And so I played that let's see what's happening game. Now, you know, for me, having had experience, I did at that point about 12 commercials. I did about 2 or 3 sitcoms. I was already doing The Biggest Loser, which is a combination of two things I love, both television and fitness.
How many total episodes?
I don't know the exact number, yeah. But you got to keep in mind, it's like...
A lot.
More...
How many episodes
more you got? More than 100.
How many episodes you got?
How many episodes? A lot.
A lot.
A lot. How many episodes you got? A lot. A lot.
Back in the fire.
Right. So it was one of those things where I could have done more of the things I loved. I could have done hosting, which I love to host television shows.
And you're great at it.
You know what I mean? And I think that's now, fast forward, why I started doing podcasts. And I started, you know, audio and voiceovers and things of this nature, where I started diving now back into acting again and doing the things that I love.
How long between you giving up your gym and them pausing the show? What's the
years?
Okay.
4 years.
So when the show ended, did you have any regret, like, shit, I wish I still had that to fall back on, or?
To some degree, it was such a headache, and I had trainers stealing money and stealing clients. So in one way, yes, it's like breakups suck.
Yep.
But there's also benefits there too, because it adds a clearing and an opportunity to win on the other side. And I was doing bigger, broader deals, right?
Yep.
As opposed to micromanaging individuals.
Yep.
So did I miss it in a way? No. In a way, yes, because I could have leveraged so much more and did franchise deal. Like, you have 20 gyms now, because those are Trainer Dalvet Quince is now opening up. You follow what I'm saying? There could have been a business opportunity there where I could have tripled net worth. You know, I had an opportunity where this guy came to me and said, I've been watching you on the show for a while. And he was a money guy. Like, he worked at Merrill Lynch or something like that. And he was inspired to create an app where it was sort of like an audio coach. Because he was at a Soul Cycle class, for example, doing a class. And he said something about the cadence of the music. And he said he saw in my episode and heard my voice sort of guiding people along. But the music got a little lower. My voice got a little higher. My voice is in your headphones on the app, and I'm saying to you, push a little harder, right step, left step. And I'm guiding you as you're on a run at the beach. I'm guiding you as you're on a treadmill. I'm guiding you as you're lifting weights. I am your voice in the, and it was the one thing NBC said no to. They said yes to everything else. The reason they said no, that I couldn't do that deal, is because they wanted me to be the face of BiggestLoser.com. That I'm explaining to you, that app ended up being the valued at about 150, 200 million. Oh. I was going to get 25%.
So that app executed. They
executed the thing. I think it's recently has gone down, but at this peak, I would have been a part of something.
A nine-figure company.
At least. And that's, to me, like, cringing.
So this holding pattern not only strings you along of some optimism of everything's going to be okay, but you're turning down deals that have now cost you. In that case, that's an eight-figure
1,000%
opportunity cost. Yep.
8-figure percent. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of that ebbs and flows, right? All of that, and again, I'm smart enough, ambitious enough to find new ways to repurpose, and that's where I am now.
Not letting you go there yet.
Right.
We're almost there.
Right.
So at what point do you know, okay, this is getting sunsetted. They're not bringing it back. Right. You said it's about an 18-month window.
Right. I would say about 10 months in.
Okay. So it's a year that you're on pause.
At least a year, close to a year, where it's like, they're not calling us back. This actually isn't happening.
Do you call them? You're like, hey, is this done?
Yeah. Like, what's going on? We're working on some stuff. We don't know yet.
Vague.
It's very vague. And that's the business. The business is vague.
What, take me through the emotions for you. You said 80, 90% of your income.
So I started trying new things. I went back to my basics. Like, let me invest because I had some money saved. Let me invest in this startup. It's a startup, right? But it was in the fitness world, right? Let me endorse some deals. I've obviously had success with various companies. Let me take whatever I've built and be a part of something great. I did all that.
was the hardest part of the end of the run, of that particular run?
The sense of purpose was gone. You know, I came here with an identity and a purpose to do good and be validated for the work I knew I could do. And it was almost like that rug was swept under me to say, oh, you don't get to do it anymore. Figure out what's next. And I empowered
without
other
control.
People.
Like,
without control.
You have no influence over that.
At all. And that's, to me, the hardest part, right? It's like someone who influenced their entire life direction and created jobs for others has now been told, hurry up and wait. Very difficult place to be in for me. And I rode that wave for a while. I remember going to the gym and I'm working out with my friend, Chris Spencer, who is comedian, actor, director. And he said to me, hey, come to my show. I'll be at the Laugh Factory or Comedy Store, wherever he said to go, right around the corner from here. And I was like, you're still doing comedy? He said, yeah, bro, I got to exercise what got me. I still got to go back to basics. And it was like, bling. It just hit me over the head. Why did I let go what I originally loved? And I found myself going back to the core of me, right? Getting into that. And that, because I gave back to that young 23-year-old version of me, opportunities started opening up. So it's amazing how that happens.
That's good. It's a good transition. So you build this global brand.
Yep.
I mean, how many people at the peak are watching this show?
I mean, millions. It was one of the most sought after television shows. Like, I became a household name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I literally could not go in a room.
Wheaties box.
Brother, not even that. You put that there, right? And that was an endorsement deal that they were trying to convince me to be a part of their program. That's why it even existed in the first place. But I'm at a party, and I'll have to say this name for content. I won't say the name. This big producer who's in jail now threw the best Golden Globe parties, period. Everybody and their grandmother is at this party. And I remember being at the party, and I walk in and, you know, bring one of the trainers with me. Luckily, one of the securities recognized me. He's like, of course, you belong in here too. And I'm in the party, and I'm seeing, oh, this is Kim Kardashian. There's so-and-so actor. There's Tom Hanks. There's whoever. Idris Elba. This woman walks up to me and she's like, you're the guy from that show. This has happened to me over and over again from people that I'm like this. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you're Madonna. Right? Like, it happened all the time. The same thing happened to me. I was on a flight leaving New York, coming back to Los Angeles, packed flight, first class. Guy walks in with an airport guide.
Yeah.
So people don't bother him, whatever. Yep. He sits down, he has his Carhartt hat on, this Carhartt jacket, I'll never forget, with the fuzz, takes it off. I lean forward, I recognize him. He sits down, hour into the flight, have my sport coat on, I take it off, didn't want to bother the flight attendant, rolled it up, put it above me, sat down. He leans forward and looks at me. I'm like, okay. He gets up, he goes to the bathroom, he comes out, and he says, aren't you Dalvet from that show, The Biggest Loser? I said, aren't you fucking Ryan Gosling from Everywhere? From Everywhere? Don't fucking am I Dalvet. But the popularity of the show and the visibility and the millions of people had opportunities like that. His story was his sister watched the show all the time. I was her favorite trainer on the show.
Yeah, of course.
So he just sat there and watched it. That's why he recognized. And we talked for probably 30 minutes because of that. But
so the reach was massive.
Massively.
From high, and from high, you know, influence.
Influence people.
Well, physical, as you know, I'm preaching the choir, physical crosses the barriers of wealth. It crosses the barriers of status. 100%. Because you can be the greatest singer in the world, but if you're out of weight, overweight, out of shape, mm-hmm. You know, you cross over that barrier, but also cross over to the line of anyone in poverty, right?
Sure.
So it's such an interesting...
Sure.
It's such an interesting lane.
Yeah.
You know, you touch everyone.
Yeah.
So, how did you put it behind you? How did you put that part of your life behind you and say, fuck it, okay, they're not calling back. This isn't coming back. We got to move on. Like,
I moved on. I kept going. I kept doing the things that I like. Got back into what I loved, personal training. I started thinking of ways to get back into doing television. I did a couple commercials. I just went back into what I love to do, and it gave me opportunities to win again. Quick answer to that question. Let's go back a couple years ago during the pandemic.
Yep.
And I made a decision to lend myself to those in need. So I did this amazing thing where I did first the movement, then the message. I wanted to give people a reason to show up. So I got on my Instagram Live and I said, tune in at 9 a.m. If you want to come work out with me for free, I'm going to work out for free with you for 30 minutes, 5 days a week. But in the other 30 minutes, I'm going to sit down with you guys and I'm going to give you some hope and some, you know, a reason to show up, right? That was for Monday through Friday. On Saturday, I'm going to open up my phone also at 9 a.m., do an Instagram Live, and I'm going to do guided meditation. On Sunday at 6 p.m. specific, I'm actually going to do a talent show. I want to hear from you guys. And so I gave people 7 days a week a reason
something
to show
to plug
up.
Into.
Something to plug into is a reason. When I did that and then pushed it out into the world, I gave, watch how I get, right? By giving, I get. Now corporations are emailing me, hey, we didn't realize you did this sort of thing. Can you do this for our 7,000 employees? You know, can you do this for our 4,000 employees? And so now I'm creating this business because I gave time away. So again, tapping into what I love and to do, it created a sense of purpose again.
Well, you have so much content in your brain that you've written about, that you've given, that you've offered. Shifting to, you know, kind of the audience that's watching, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, sales professionals, your wheelhouse topic, like the best three things that you would love for them to understand or know. Like, you got to understand this, you got to believe in this, you got to practice this. What are they for you? And it doesn't have to be three, it could be two, it could be four, whatever you want to do.
The first thing I would say is belief isn't enough without action. You can believe all day, but you got to get up and put something into that belief. Don't become somebody who believes and just talk. Become somebody who believes, talks, walks, and lives it, first and foremost. Secondly, I would say, don't go at it alone. If you don't have all the answers, dig into the answer. And when I say don't go at it alone, that doesn't necessarily mean reach out and give away your idea, but dig into the education of it. How could I best make this product work? What is it gonna take? Where does my competition lie? And once you do all that research, then you're gonna win.
Beautiful. Well, we are out of time.
He's
out of time. He's out of time, so therefore we're out of time. We could do this shit for hours though, if we could. Episode 18, Forged by Fire. It's a wrap. Delvet Quince, find him online, follow him everywhere, hit his handles. Be a part of his lives and be a part of his life. And if anything here has touched you, you know, share it, subscribe, get it out there, get the word out. We love you. We appreciate you. See you on episode 19. We done.